What's going on, everyone, and welcome back to the Surprise Jab Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Ruger, spicing through topics every single week and jabbing you with your daily dose of UFC, and we have a fantastic event this weekend. UFC Noche, the third annual UFC Noche, is going down this weekend, and it is arguably the worst UFC Noche, but nonetheless, we have 14 fights as of Wednesday, September 10th at 1:35 p.m., so we'll see if this card remains intact. There are a lot of good fights in the main event. Diego Lopez, Gene Silva has potential to be the best main event of the entire year. I mean, this is going to be so intense. I have no idea who's going to win. I'm actually still torn on a lot of my picks for this card, so we'll have to see to the end of the episode when I make my predictions live on the podcast. Also, on today's episode, we will be dropping our NFL Week 2 predictions, 16 new matchups to bring to your guys' attention. I went 3-for-3. In my fantasy football leagues, and that's 3-3, as in 3 wins, 3 defeats. So we're looking to bounce back in fantasy football this week. I actually started writing a blog for my friends league, so if anyone's actually interested in reading that, they could reach out to me and I could send them the link, because I'm always happy to share it, because it took me like 2 hours to write just the week one review blog, if you will. Also gonna be talking about Dan Weiss-Quintero series episode 5, as we have 5 new contracts being handed out and even a new person returning later in the season. We got a lot of fun on today's episode. Yeah, I'm excited for this one, and it's going to be a good time. This is going to be a good episode, guys. I can promise you that. And it's because we're starting with something surprising, something we don't always start with. That's because we legit have no new UFC fights to talk about. I know on the broadcast for Dan Weiss-Quintero series, they announced that Bosanjer Susukarev is taking on Eric Makanko at either UFC 322 or UFC Qatar. I think it's 322, but I don't know. But we had already known about that. I guess it had just been made official on the UFC broadcast, but I had known about that for some time. So Bosanjer Susukarev, who has easily become the biggest star of season 9 of Dan Weiss-Quintero series, is already back for another matchup. And they're trying to give him another layup to continue the undefeated finishing streak. I'll be excited to see that matchup when it happens, nonetheless. But we are starting off today's episode with a look at the updated UFC rankings. We had some interesting updates take place, so I figured I would go over them. The rankings update every Tuesday, so we do have some new stuff to discuss. First off, no changes at women's bantamweight. And I don't know why the number 6th ranked Irene Aldana is not fighting on UFC, UFC freaking Noche, the one card that we're talking about today. She fought last year in September. That's the last time that she's ever fought. So Irene Aldana, big miss not having her on this card. And other than that, I mean, there's been no fight announcements. Like, women's bantamweight is dead. It's easily the worst women's division. It is in desperate need of some help. Some interesting changes at women's flyweight, as Luiana Carolina debuts at number 15 in the ranking. She's got a fight coming up September 27th. She did pick up a victory July of 2024, but other than that, she's had nothing take place. So I'm very confused why she's now in the rankings at number 15, but it is what it is. Eduardo Mora moves up to 13, Wang Kong up to 12, Casey O'Neill up to 11, Miranda Maverick up to 10, and Karine Silva up to 9. I'm sure out of those names I listed, Karine Silva and Wang Kong will make the biggest impact, but as for everyone else, no new fight news. Interesting changes. Macy Barber moves from 6 to 5. Jasmine Jasudevicius now ranked at 6. Jasmine has a fight coming up with the number 2 ranked Manon Fiorot. I am very perplexed why they would move Macy Barber over her, especially since the fact that Macy Barber was in the worst main event of the year this year, because it never happened. She literally like fainted or had some medical issue right before walkout. So Macy Barber, don't even know how she's still in the company, has passed Jasmine Jasudevicius. But UFC Vancouver, October 18th, check out Jasmine Jasudevicius versus Manon Fiorot. It's going to be amazing. Women's flyweight, no changes whatsoever. Of course, you have Virna Jandidova taking on Mackenzie Dern for the vacant women's strawweight belt at UFC 321. At UFC 322, Zhang Weili will move up in weight to try and become a double champion. And this weekend, we do have Tatiana Suarez and Amanda Lemos, the number 2 and 4 women's strawweights doing battle. We'll be dropping a prediction for that later in the episode. No changes in the women's pound for pound, but the women's pound for pound is the most broken pound for pound of any single thing on the planet. Like, the men's pound for pound is already kind of like, it's debatable. Women's pound for pound makes utterly no sense, as Manon Fiorot is somehow the number 4 pound for pound woman on the planet. It just doesn't make sense to me whatsoever. But let's get into the men, as the men's heavyweight division has some changes. Ante Deleje debuts at number 9 following his victory over the number 7th ranked Marcin Tybura. Marcin is bumped down to number 10. Derek Lewis moves up to 8, and Sergey Spivak up to 7, I actually agree with this. I actually agree with how they did this because Derek Lewis and Sergei Spivak both hold wins over Marcin Tybura. He had just somehow moved his way a bit above them, which kind of didn't really make any sense. Tai Tuivasa is down to 11. Shmuel Gaziev down to 12. Mick Parkin down to 13. Tashan Teixeira to 14. Walter Walker to 15. And I couldn't even tell you who they bumped out of the rankings at number 15 because I generally don't know. The bottom of the men's heavyweight division is broken. We do have a lot of fun fighters, you know, coming off of Dana White's Contender Series, but as of right now, Walter Walker is probably my favorite prospect, along with Shamil Gaziev. And as for Ante Delaje, don't really know if you can call him a prospect, but he's now in the UFC. Feel great for him. He says he already has another fight booked for the end of the year, and that could either be the number 7th ranked Sergey Spivak, the number 6th ranked Waldo Cortez Acosta. I could even go all the way up to the number 3 ranked Sergey Pavlovich. Big things in store for the man from Croatia, Ante Delaje. As for Sergey Spivak, if it's not Ante Delaje, I presume he'll be fighting down against someone like Shamil Gaziev. That would be my guess if I were to try and predict something. And for Derek Lewis, I mean, Derek Lewis could do anything. Derek could really do anything right now. And as of right now, there are no fights for him. So I'm just going to matchmake him with someone he hasn't fought yet. And that's going to be Waldo Cortez Acosta, because it'd be a big bounce back fight for Waldo and a good opportunity for Derek to get another knockout. As for Tybura, Walter Walker, Marcin Tybura, there's a matchup we can do. Light heavyweight has two changes as Dominic Reyes passes Alexander Rakic from 8 to 7, and Azamat Mirzakhanov passes Bogdan Guskov from 11 to 10. Azamat has a fight coming up with Rakic in just under a month, actually, at UFC 320. As for Bogdan Guskov at 11, he is linked to a UFC Qatar main event against the number 5 ranked Jan Blachowicz. I don't know if that's actually going to happen or if it's just rumors on the internet, but that would be a fantastic main event. As for the number 7th ranked Dominic Reyes, him and the 3 ranked Carlos Ulberg will main event September 27th in Perth, Western Australia. That is going to be so much fun. It is truly going to prove if Dominic Reyes is back, because they're finally giving him someone legit that's not Anthony Smith, Dustin Jacoby, or Nikita Krylov. It's freaking Carlos Ulberg, who's on a 8-fight winning streak. So light heavyweight has a lot of fun matchups going down, and actually, as I look at the top 15, we have just about every fighter booked. It's fantastic to see. I love when a division is moving quickly, such as the one up next, the middleweight division. It has easily been one of the best divisions. We get a lot of main events, you get a lot of new contenders getting opportunities, and you get a lot of title fights. And as of right now, Kyle Barallo did lose to Nezdin Ivov, who remains ranked number 2. He moves from 7 to 8 as Robert Whitaker is bumped up to number 8. MVP moves up to 9 and Jerry Cannonier moves up to 10 as Brendan Allen drops 2 spots to now be tied with Roman Dolidze for the number 11 spot in the rankings. I still don't understand how you can have a tie in the rankings, but somehow Brendan Allen and Roman Dolidze are. So the middleweight division has a lot of hectic stuff going on right now. Khamzat Chimaev, as of this moment, will be taking on Nazarene Imavov in 2026, but with a main event coming up in Vancouver between the number 4 ranked Ritter and the number 6 ranked Anthony Fluffy Hernandez, those two could say something else about who takes on Boris Chimaev. So I'll be excited for that main event in October. As for Kyle Barallo at 8, him and Brendan Allen verbally agreed to a matchup, and I think that's perfect. I think it makes sense. I think it works for both those guys, and I think they're on the same skill level right now. So Kyle Barallo at 8, Brendan Allen at 11. Let's run it. I doubt they can get it going at the end of the year, but early 2026 would be a fantastic main event, and even if it's in the Apex, I would still love it. As for Robert Whitaker at 7, I don't know what to do with him, but how about him versus MVP? Would anyone be mad at Robert Whitaker versus Michael Page? I think that'd be a banger main event. And same goes for Jerry Cannonier and Roman Dolidze at 10 and 11. Let's just have those two face each other. It works for me. No changes at welterweight or lightweight as Mauricio Ruffy stays at 15 and Benoit Saint-Denis remains at 13. I thought they should have moved Benoit at least up to 12, passing Michael Chandler, but I guess not. And as for welterweight, nothing really going on right now with welterweight. I'll say for lightweight, there are a lot of questions about who's Armin Tsarukyan going to fight, who will Ilia Topuria fight, who will Justin Gaethje, Dan Hooker, Paddy Pimblett all fight. But the one thing we do know is that Charles Oliveira and Rafael Fiziev are going to fight, which is going to be a fantastic main event October 11th in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. Moving on to featherweight, no changes there at all, but we do have a matchup between the 2 and 10 guys this weekend. Excited to discuss that. Bantamweight, no changes and no real real news. We're still waiting on news about Sean O'Malley, Peter Yan, Song Yeong. I mean, Devs and Figueiredo, there's not a lot of traction going on at bantamweight, and I think we need to dial it up because that division is stacked. For men's flyweight, also no changes, but we're just waiting on Joshua Van versus Alexander Pantoa to be announced. And to round out our little rankings check-in, the men's pound for pound has no new changes, but as I was saying before, like, when I look at the women's, there isn't much, like, clarity, but when I look at the men's, Ito Pure at 1, Islam Makhachev at 2, Marab at 3, Hamza Chimaev at 4, Alexander Pantoa at 5, all those guys are just so interchangeable with one big win. I just find it pretty incredible that just the top of the division is so stacked. The next person we're going to see in action is going to be the 3-ranked Marab and the 7th-ranked Magomed Ankalaev. So I'll be excited to see their pound-for-pound fights. But yeah, other than that, the rankings are a-moving, are a-shaking, but that's all the updates we have for that. But we're not done with UFC for this episode. Of course, we'll be covering UFC Noche, but I was also able to watch episode 5 of season 9 for Dana White's Contender Series, and yet another week where it delivers. I mean, come on, the fights they're putting on are just so much fun. Now, did I do good on predictions? Not really. I think I went either 3-for-2 or 2-for-3. I genuinely can never remember the picks I make. I went 3-2. Okay, not too bad. 3-2, but we had a lot of fun fights, so let's discuss it as we have 5 new people fighting in the UFC. Kicking it off, women's strawweight division, Carol Foro and Chanel Dyer. Easily one of the best women's fights, not only in Dana White's Contender Series history, but just in general. 117 significant strikes to 115 in favor of Carol Foyer. She defends 11 takedowns from Chanel Dyer and lands 3 knockdowns, 2 in round 1. Okay, so Carol Foro, I have no idea how Chanel Dyer survived round 1. It was utterly crazy. We head into round 2. Chanel Dyer gets dropped again early in the round, then fights back to outstrike her 35-26. Then, this is what really sold Dana White, is that Chanel Dyer's corner, which, by the way, at the same gym as Loner Kavanaugh and Nathaniel Wood, she has good coaches, tell her in round 3, you are down. You are down. You don't just need to win. You don't just need to win the round, Chanel Dyer. You need to go out there and finish her for 5 minutes. For 5 minutes, she stands toe-to-toe with Carol Foro and is showing, throwing body kicks, throwing headshots, trying to just knock her out in any capacity. 41 significant strikes at 35. This was fantastic. And this whole time, Chanel Dyer had a nasty cut over her eye. Her face is so bloody and had the entire arena packed, clapping on their feet. So Chanel Dyer, unfortunately, suffers her first career defeat, but Dana White says, I gotta have you in the UFC. So the 24-year-old will be heading to a contract in the UFC, and the women's strawweight division is lucky to have her. As for Carol Foro, I mean, 9-1 now. What more could you ask for? 7-fight winning streak. Dana White is pumped to have her, and the women's strawweight division better be put on notice, because we have a great prospect in Carol Foro. I mean, I'm being ambitious here, you know, with the women's strawweight division, but I do not doubt that you could put her in there against someone like Denise Gomez, and she could hang. She could maybe even win that fight. This is a fantastic opening to the card, and I always love when the 3-round fights are actually interesting, because when they're not, it just kills me. And thankfully, we didn't have to go to any more judges' scorecards, as our other 4 fights all ended in finishes. And first up, it was the 2nd fight of the evening, lightweight division. The 22-year-old Samuel Sanchez. Oh my goodness. Just oh my goodness. The win streak is now at 8. He now has his 8th career knockout. And this was one of the weirdest knockouts I've ever seen. This was really, really weird. And so the fight starts, and by the way, Chase Blair didn't land a single strike in this fight. He only attempted 1 strike, went 0-3 on takedowns, just holding Samuel against the clinch. And then right when Samuel broke it, he knocked him out. So Chasen Blair, opportunity 2 on Dana White's Contender Series, doesn't go well. But Samuel has him up against the cage, immediately just starts throwing, and I kid you not, it's literally like Chasen Blair had narcolepsy, because he legit, like, I didn't even see the punch that hit him, but it was almost just like, you know how like a snake, like, kind of just like slithers down? That's what his body looked like was when he got slumped. I mean, it literally looked like he just went to sleep, and like his like shoulders relaxed, his head relaxed, and he just slumped down. I mean, it was vicious, and Samuel Sanchez is going to be bringing some nasty hands into the UFC. And this was also a great win for the gym that is Galapo da Lute, which is Halton Almeida's gym, because their gym is often taking losses, as we're going to find out in another second. But Samuel Sanchez, utterly vicious, utterly destructive, and 2 minutes and 1 second, didn't even absorb a single strike. Yeah, we'll love to see it in the UFC. And I mean, this was nasty. This had me out of my seat. I would be out of my seat again, even more so later on in the episode. But this was just such a good second fight, especially following up a three rounder with a 2 minute knockout in this fashion. Phenomenal. Samuel Sanchez, I cannot wait to see you. As for Chasen Blair, two fights on the Contender Series, two nasty knockouts. Yeah, you're just not cut out for a kid. 7-4 record, that'll do it for his UFC adventures. And next up, we head to the light heavyweight division, and this was easily one of the worst fights I've seen in the last 3 weeks. Probably since episode one. This is the worst fight I've seen. Felipe Franco taking on Freddie Vidal. Felipe, 24 years old, you know, coming in undefeated, 8-0, taking on the 3-0 Freddie Vidal. And this was sloppy. This was just not good. Neither of these guys looked UFC caliber, but at the end of the day, Freddie Vidal pulls it out, gets a submission with 12 seconds left in the fight. Round one, you know, Felipe Franco, 4 of 10. On takedowns, all right, and gets reversed at the end of the round. By the way, 4 of 10 on takedowns, Freddie Vidal landed 62 total strikes to 7. So Felipe Franco didn't even know how to throw. Round 2 comes around, Felipe Franco outstrikes him on the feet, 23-13. Goes 1 of 2 on takedowns, defends 2 takedowns. You know, it was still close. I actually had Felipe Franco up in both of those rounds, but they were both pretty bad. Round 3 comes around, and Felipe Franco, yet again, is shooting takedowns, lands one, eventually gets back up, then fails, then goes for another one. It gets reversed, and Freddie Vidal ends up on top. He then is pounding on him. Then, you know, Felipe Franco ends up on top, and then Freddie Vidal takes his back. By the way, these two guys were gassed at the end of round one. No cardio in either of them. Freddie takes his back, locks in a rear naked choke, and Felipe goes to sleep. Domination from Freddie Vidal to end out the fight. And yeah, his boys, Aljamain Sterling, you know, that whole fight camp. He is a high school football coach. They showed his gym and all his players at a bar just going ballistic. I felt so happy for Freddie Vidal. I really did. I don't even know how old he is. Like, how old even is Freddie Vidal? They didn't have his age listed anywhere. Okay, he's 31 years old. Not too bad. He's 4-0 now. Dana White did say that fight was awful, but speaking to him after the fight, seeing all the people cheering for him, he's going to give him one more shot on episode 10 of this season. He did take this on short notice. He was 240 pounds, cut 25 pounds to make the light heavyweight limit, which I don't even know what the light heavyweight limit is, to be fair, and, you know, somehow managed to get in and take this fight at light heavyweight. So Freddie Vidal will be back to have another fight in 5 weeks on episode 10. So we'll see if he can get a contract then. Did not get one tonight. And yeah, Felipe Franco, you are not getting a contract whatsoever, man. I don't know if he can work his way back, but definitely was a little green. The style that Halton Almeida fights with, it works because he actively hunts for a finish, is successful with his takedowns, and is just able to uphold his cardio. As for Felipe Franco, it did not work for you, and Freddie Vidal pulls out the victory. It was an awful fight, but then seeing the ending and seeing how crazy everyone went, it kind of rejuvenated the energy, and that energy never left the building as we had him to the co-main event. This guy, I cannot wait to watch him debut at the UFC. Larian Douglas destroys Cam Teague. Oh my goodness. This is maybe my favorite knockdown on Dana's Contender Series of all time. I'm going to say it right here. I mean, two knockdowns in 36 seconds, 7 significant strikes at 3. Who even let Cam Teague in? Who told Cam Teague he was a good UFC fighter? Because this man is absolutely starved. So mind you, like I said, 7 significant strikes. All right, they're going at it. Okay, they're going at it. It's either the first or second punch Larian Douglas lands, just flatlines Cam Teague. He lands to the mat. He then gets up, is scrambling away, gets clipped once, gets clipped with a hook, okay? Gets hit with a hook coming in, then gets hit with an overhand as he's going against the cage, ready to weigh, hits the cage as the punch hits him, in the same motion that he's running away, and he just face plants on the mat. Larian Douglas, a highlight reel knockout. Go watch this. Larian Douglas, Cam Teague, season 9, episode 5 of Daniel's Contreras series, 36 seconds. You can watch the whole fight. Two amazing knockdowns, and the second one putting his lights out. Oh, so, so good. Make it 5 straight wins for Larian Douglas. That Cub Swanson, he's looking like an OG Cub Swanson. Getting that knockout, also getting his 7th career finish by knockout, 9th career finish overall. Larian Douglas, the gunslinger. He's also got a nasty nickname as well. Cannot wait to see this guy in the men's featherweight division. I mean, this guy's going to be an issue. He's going to be a problem. And I'm excited to see who they matchmaker with. You can put him in there against anyone, truly against anyone. I'm actually going to go Robert Ruchala, who just lost to William Gomez this past weekend. I think those two would put on an absolute war. Let's book that fight, UFC. As for Cam Teague, 9-2, both his losses on the Contender Series. Kevin Vlahos and Larian Douglas, not too bad of names to lose to. But after getting knocked out like them, I think your time in the corporation has come to an end. Cam Teague will not be getting himself a UFC contract. But you know what? I think he can pick up some wins on the independent scene. So best of luck to him in his future endeavors. And then we got to the main event, and I won't sugarcoat it. Steve Asplund just destroys Anthony Garcia. And Anthony Garcia came in with the moxie. He was so confident. So confident. And then these two just start swinging right off the bat. By the way, this fight lasted 16 seconds. There's no time. No time to even gauge anything. They start throwing. Steven Asplund catches him with kind of like an uppercut hook. Down he goes. Lands some follow-up elbows. That is that. Anthony then like puts his hands up like, Mark Smith, why'd you stop this fight? And it's because he's getting utterly destroyed. So Steven Asplund, 3-fight win streak, 5th career knockout. Guy's 6-1 now, and he went insane on the micro. And even Dana White was like, yeah, you're obviously getting a contract. I don't really want to talk to you too much. He starts saying like, Dana, I'll suck your toes. Dana, I'll do anything. I'm the fat boy. He's jiggling his like nipples. I mean, this dude was going crazy. I then found out that this guy's from Minnesota. His family owns a concrete business, and it's literally like 25, 30 minutes from my house, like from where I live. It might even be 20 minutes. I mean, this guy is right in my backyard. I know exactly where this guy lives. So good win for Steven Asplund. Heavyweights will take you. And someone suggested we should have him and Josh Hokit throw down, and honestly, I would hate to just have two guys coming off the Contender Series fight each other, but of all the freaking fights that we've had, these two heavyweights, I mean, I just don't see either of them lasting in the UFC. Like, I hate to be mean, but I just generally don't think Steven Asplund is cut out for UFC competition. Like, I think someone, like, as I look at the rankings, I think Walter Walker, Talshawn Teixeira, Mick Parkin, Shmuel Gaziev, any one of the rankings would just demolish this guy. So having him fight a fellow Dan White's Contender Series alum in the UFC for their debut, I think it works out perfectly. So good ending for Steven Asplund. As for Anthony Garcia, this was only his 5th professional fight and the first time he's been knocked out. So tough L for Anthony Garcia. But to be fair, I have seen guys get knocked out in 16 seconds on Damon's Contender Series and come back, get a 7-second knockout, and then get another chance in the UFC at Alonzo Menifield. He is proof of it. So both these guys will be able to rebound, I know. As for Steven Asplund, he'll be rebounding coming off of a massive knockout. And as for Anthony, he'll be rebounding coming off of a nasty loss. Yeah. But anyways, another successful Dana White's Contender Series, and this is why I watch. This is why it is so good, and I find it crazy that they put so much effort into The Ultimate Fighter, and it sucks. And if they put even more effort into Dana White's Contender Series, it would be a hit. And I kid you not, they should take this. I've seen MMA Theory on Instagram, great account I follow, posting about this, is that they should turn this into an actual event headlined by some not even ranked guys. Doesn't have to be headlined by anyone, but just headlined by two UFC fighters, such as having, like if we were to go back to the Paris card, and when we look at the UFC Paris card, you had some very good fights, like such as, what's a great example? I would say Mason Jones, Blasio Key. You know how fun that fight was. Modestus Bukauskas, Paul Craig. Guys that aren't even ranked, that aren't even, you know, going to be fighting for a ranked spot for a fight or two. Having them main event, you can hold it in a small venue, and you could do more Dana White's Contender Series fights. Like, you could expand to 7 or 8 fights. It'd be a pretty good idea, which I could get behind. So, fun stuff on episode 5. I cannot wait for next week. I'm actually pumped. I'm not even going to look at the fights. I always like to look at them kind of a day or two beforehand just to really surprise myself. But Yeah, and of everyone on this card, I really hope Freddy Vidal can get a contract. I think that would be fun, but they're definitely gonna it's definitely gonna be tough, depending on who he fights in Week 10. But I think Samuel Sanchez will find a little bit of success. Carol Foro should find some good success at women's strawweight. And as for Larian Douglas, I think at featherweight, he is going to be a ranked man. That's my prediction. Larian Douglas will be a ranked man by the end of his UFC run. But with that, ladies and gentlemen, we're gonna take a little break from the UFC and head to the NFL. That's right, we're back with another week, just like that. This is gonna be our future for the next freaking 5 months, just talking about NFL on almost every episode. But it's a good another week, you know, another opportunity for fantasy football, which at the end of the day is all I care about, and my Minnesota Vikings winning, but I don't ride or die, really, but yeah. Anyways, I don't even know what I'm saying, but let's get right into our week two quick pick. So, kicking us off, Amazon Prime Video, Thursday, literally tomorrow, 9/11. Rest in peace to all the lost souls. Did George Bush do it? I don't know. But anyways, the Commanders visit the Packers, and yeah, both these guys are 1-0. And when I look at their first two games, because you can't really judge anything until you're about 6-7, I wasn't even trying to make a joke, probably about 8 games in to the NFL season, you get a gist of who's going to be good and who's going to be bad. We can't tell anything right now. Not at all. And from what I saw in week number one, I'll say the Packers looked phenomenal over the Lions, 27-13. Didn't even allow a touchdown until the final, like, 5 minutes of the fourth quarter. Their overall team looked outstanding. As for the Commanders, I expected more. You know, 21-6 over the Giants. I understand the Giants are better. They have a good defense. But, I mean, I just didn't see enough. All right? And I think the Commanders are going to kind of start off 1-0 and then go into this 1-1, maybe even 1-2 to start the year. Now, as for the Packers, I'm going to use some reverse psychology as I hate them. Hopefully, if I pick them every week, then either they win and I get a correct pick or they lose and I'm happy that they lost. So we're going to go with the Packers to beat the Commanders. At the end of the day, I just hope Jaden Daniels doesn't get too locked up. Getting into our Sunday games, not on Friday or Saturday, unfortunately, for all you hardcores at the noon slate, Jaguars visiting the Bengals. I'm excited for this one. I think this is going to be much closer than people think it will be. I'm a big fan of a lot of Jaguars players. Unfortunately, Tank Bigsby is not going to be the starting running back, but Jaguars beat the Panthers, you know, week one. Their offense didn't even do anything too extraordinary, I'll say, and same goes for the Bengals. They beat the Browns by 1 point. You know, I don't know. The Bengals have all the tools. It makes sense to pick the Bengals. They're the favorites. And I think I have Joe Burrow, Jamar Chase, and Chase Brown in a couple leagues, so I might as well root for them. So we're going to go with the Bengals to beat the Jaguars just because it's the obvious pick and it's an easy pick to go with. Also on that noon slate, Giants visiting the Cowboys. Cowboys are minus 260. Giants are plus 215. Both of them starting the season off 0-1. I don't know if Russell Wilson has still got it. He did good with the Steelers, but him with the Giants just isn't working. I would love to see Jackson Dart get involved, for goodness sakes. I actually would love to see that. As for the Cowboys, they played the Eagles pretty close, 24-20. I think that once you get George Pickens involved, once you get Dak Prescott actually moving, he's going to do wonders. So I'm going to go with the Cowboys to beat the Giants. I just don't really see it from the Giants this year. I really don't. And for the Cowboys, I do expect good things. However, Dak Prescott, you will have to chill on my bench as I think I'm starting Justin Fields this week. Another noon game, Bears visiting the Lions. We're getting these NFC North games just right off the bat. I love it. And Bears are, of course, the underdogs in the plus 200s. And minus 250 is the Lions. And Lions are really a team that is supposed to go out and get a win. They are not supposed to be losing, and I feel like they always do lose for some reason. I don't even understand. As for the Bears, if you're choking a loss like that to the Vikings, I think you can choke a loss like that to the Lions. Lions had a rough game against the Packers, but the Bears really fell apart late, which just wasn't it. And Cairo Santos wasn't hitting game-winning kicks when he should have. So as much as I think the Bears won't be as bad as they are on paper, I think their record is really going to unfortunately hurt them this year. So we're going to go with the Lions. I also think I have DJ Moore, though, but that won't affect me. I'm going to go with the Lions to beat the Bears. I don't even need reasoning. They're both my rivals in the NFC North. Another noon game, Rams visiting the Titans. I don't really know what would make me pick the Titans this year. I generally don't know. And the Titans just, Cam Ward is unfortunately following this criteria of number one pick sucking. Number one pick quarterbacks have been doing atrocious for the longest time, and they did play the Broncos close, but they didn't score a touchdown. They didn't score a single touchdown, and Cam Ward didn't show anything of notoriety. As for the Rams, Rams were impressive, beating the Texans 14-9, not allowing a touchdown from them. That's what you do. That's what you do to be impressive, and I think the Rams are going to expose the secondary. Puka Nacua and Davante Adams are going to eat. Give me the Rams over the Titans. Next up on the noon slate, Patriots and Dolphins. There's a preview tab you can look at on ESPN. Wow, matchup predictor, 52% for Dolphins, 47.6% for the Patriots. I didn't even know about this, and it tells you the league leader in stats. So it's funny when I look at the stats, is that the Dolphins were shockingly blown out by the Colts. I mean, no one saw that coming. No one predicted that. Unless you're a Colts fan, even I think Colts fans were a bit shocked by that. 33-8. It was 20-0 at halftime. And Daniel Jones looked like the prime Peyton Manning, doing just incredible stuff out there on the field. As for the Patriots, you know, I don't think it was that bad of a loss. 20-13 to the Raiders. For goodness sake, their offense looked pretty freaking good, but, you know, I got the Dolphins in this one. I think if they're going to bounce back, they're going to bounce back in this fashion. And it's always a team like the Patriots to play the Raiders close, and people be like, oh, they'll bounce back here, and then they end up losing. Plus, it's minus 120 to plus 100. I'm going to go with the favorite, the Dolphins, but this is close. This was much closer than people realize. Next up on the noon slate, 49ers, Saints, 49ers. I mean, I don't even have to say anything. I know George Kittle's out. I know Brandon Ayuk is out. That just means Ricky Purcell and Christian McCaffrey are going to get an unlimited amount of touches. It's not even close. This one isn't even close. I mean, the Saints in week one, they just looked abysmal. Abysmal against the Cardinals. And they played the Cardinals close, but I think that's more so saying how bad the Cardinals suck. Preview-wise, look, I don't even know if Brock Purdy's going to play. I think he should be able to play, but this is a 66.7% match predictor to a 33.1. That's crazy. Anywhere I look, it's just telling me to go with the 49ers. I will say their injuries are adding up, which is probably going to hurt them. You have Kittle gone until October 12th. Yikes. I'm still not going to pick against them. Their defense is healthy, and good defense, bad offense. Usually a combo for the defense. Moving up to our last noon game. Wow, so many. Bills and Jets. Yeah. Bills, I mean, when Josh Allen scores almost 40 fantasy points in the first game of the year, you're going to put me on notice. That game against the Ravens, it's crazy that we might have seen game of the year in the week one, but it was an amazing game on Sunday Night Football. As for the Jets, a fantastic game as well against the Steelers, only losing by two. They were super impressive, but yeah, this Bills team, I'm going to be picking them probably all year. There's just certain teams that statistically you pick them more than other teams, and for me, it's going to be the Bills this year, because why not? They're good. They're already a minus 300 favorite. And plus, playing in the New York Jets, I mean, there isn't really that much of a difference between, you know, New York, New Jersey, and Buffalo, New York. Maybe the cold, though, that snow does add up. Still have more noon games. So many noon games to kick off the year. Wow. Seahawks and Steelers. And Seahawks at plus 130. Steelers at minus 150. I saw a TikTok saying I should pick the Seahawks, and I'm kind of tempted to pick them now. You know, they played the 49ers pretty close. They really did. Sam Darnold kind of getting a feel for the offense. As for the Steelers, a barn burner against the Jets, and all signs would point towards a Steelers win, but I kid you not, guys, I saw this kid on TikTok, and he went 14-2 in his week one predictions, and he said he has this, like, system he built, which tells him predictions, and so far he told me the Packers, the Bengals, the Dolphins, and the Seahawks, those are the only picks he's dropped for week two. And I think I might go with the Seahawks. I think I'm going to tail him here. Will it come back and bite me? Maybe. I don't know. But I'm also angry at the Steelers defense. They got me 2 points, and that really didn't help me. How did you give up 32 points to the Jets, Steelers D? I thought you guys were supposed to be good. So we're going to go with the Seahawks here. Only 14% of people on ESPN have picked them to win, which means I really like to be in the anomaly group, as you could say. So we're going to go with the Seahawks to win by how? I don't even know, but I do like Jackson Smith and Jigba, so I'll throw him some passes. Final noon game, finally, Browns and Ravens. Ravens are minus 900. So Browns at plus 550. By the way, I love underdogs in the NFL. Like, that's where you make your money. But, I mean, look, I just don't think the Browns are going to be able to get it done. And let me just tell you why. When I look at their offense, this offense has played the Ravens repeatedly. Joe Flacco has played the Ravens, played on the Ravens. He knows what he's going to be facing. And you're going to have two rookies, Dylan Sampson and I think it's like Quinshon Judkins might be his name, leading the backfield against this Ravens team, which I just think the offense is going to have themselves a field day. You might even see some backups playing by the fourth quarter. Give me the Ravens over the Browns. Not even close. Next up, 3:05 to 3:30 games. Broncos and Colts kicking us off. And I don't know, gang. I don't know. The Broncos didn't impress me too much in week number one. They didn't really show me too much that made me go, yeah, this Bo Nix, this Cortland Sutton, this Evan Engram team, they're going to be killers. No, no, no. None whatsoever. Their game versus the Titans was kind of just more show that they should have beaten the Titans by a lot, and they didn't. They really didn't do that much. Their defense is amazing, but it's the offense, which draws some questions for me. As for the Colts, they went out and blew out the Dolphins, for goodness sakes. They're an underdog. You know what? Screw it. I'm going with the Colts in this one. I think they may have a little early season momentum, and maybe, who knows, Daniel Jones will have a career revitalization here in Indy, and he'll come back super strong. So we're going to go with the Colts over the Broncos. Do I get anything for getting these picks correct? No, none whatsoever. I still need to get a feel for these teams over the first, you know, half of the season. The second half of the season is where we thrive. Next game up at 3 o'clock, Panthers and Cardinals, and 94% of people have picked the Cardinals over the Panthers. I think you're getting a little too ambitious here. I really think you are, but I will add the Panthers looked awful. They did not look good whatsoever. Bryce Young is just another one of those guys that I just don't think is going to cut it out. I just really, it was bad. It was really bad from him. Now, Chubb Hubbard, Tatoria McMillan, those guys were doing great, okay? And the defense honestly didn't do too bad against the Jaguars offense, but I will say they just don't have it going. And for this Cardinals team, sure, they picked up a pity poor win over the Saints, but they still look decently good doing it. So I am going to go with the Cardinals here. I am really going to need to see something from the Panthers, or else for maybe like the third or fourth, maybe in the fifth straight year, they're just going to be a team that I don't pick every week, because statistically, I'll get it right that way. Shame this is going down at 3:25, but I do understand, because Sunday Night Football is going to be amazing. It is the Eagles and the Chiefs. Crazy that we're already getting a Super Bowl rematch in week number two, but I don't even know what to go with here. Chiefs shockingly lost, but the Eagles shockingly won. I don't even want to say, but I think I was more just like torn by the fact that the Chiefs are plus 100. Eagles are minus 120. Ooh, I really like to see that. With the loss of Xavier Worthy, I think it kind of did hurt the momentum of that Chiefs team. And plus, the Chargers just played, I think, way harder than the Chiefs could have ever predicted. Chiefs still did good. Mahomes is a beauty. I do think the running department is in some shambles. And when I look at this Eagles team, I don't think the momentum stops here. I'm going with the Eagles to get their get back over the Chiefs yet again. Actually, they don't even need to get their get back. They already own them after winning. So we're going to go with the Eagles. Plus, I have Jalen Hurts and Saquon Barkley, and I like them more. Actually, I have Devontae Smith in my 16-man league, which the 16-man league is what I care about a lot. So Devontae Smith, please dial it up. Turn up a notch this season, baby. You got to get me some points. Getting into Sunday Night Football, which I kind of forgot. I'm going to be at this game, guys. I'm going to be at the Falcons and Vikings game, and it's the return of Kirk Cousins, and Kirk Cousins won't even be playing. That is right. Falcons visit the Vikings for the home opener in Minnesota. Minnesota is the favorite, to no one's surprise. Really, no one's surprise, but I have Bijan Robinson in the league, which I'm so happy about, because I've never had Bijan in any of my leagues. And, you know, despite losing 23-20 to the Buccaneers, they looked good. Michael Penix looked good. The wide receiver core looked good. And their star, freaking Bijan Robinson, looked amazing. So for the Vikings, they are still my Minnesota Vikings. Their comeback against the Bears was awesome. J.J. McCarthy is finding his rhythm. They're going to be at home. If they lose a home opener to the Falcons without Kirk starting, that would be embarrassing. I do think Bijan's going to eat against us. Same for the wide receivers. But I think at the end of the day, I got to pick the Vikings every single week. I'm not a loyal fan. If I don't, we're going to go with the Minnesota Vikings to beat the Atlanta Falcons. Getting into Monday, two doubleheaders, Buccaneers and Texans, and Chargers and Raiders. And for this one, it all comes down to what fantasy players I have and just how I think they're going to do. And the Texans did not impress me. They really struggled against the Rams, and this Buccaneers offense was lighting it up against the Falcons. So I'm going to go with the Buccaneers to beat the Texans, but it's a pick 'em. +115, -135. Going with an underdog in Tampa Bay on the road. I really like mixing it up with underdogs and road and home team. So Buccaneers over the Texans. Plus, I have a Mika Egbuka in a league, and I think he's going to be the best rookie wide receiver of this draft class. Then the game, which will start 3 hours later for some reason. I mean, Chargers and Raiders. I know it's going down in Cali, but still, a game starting at 9 o'clock is just ridiculous. Chargers, Raiders. I am an Ashton Jeanty supporter. I love him, but if this Chargers team plays even half as good as they get against the Chiefs, they should win by 20 over the Raiders. So I'll keep it short. I'll keep it sweet. Give me the Chargers over the Raiders. Oh, and it needs me to predict a score. How many total points? We'll say 50. It seems like a good middle ground for predicting this score. But yeah, those are my picks for week number 2. I may change them, but I doubt it. I usually just keep what I say on here. So without further ado, those are your NFL week 2 picks. But with that, ladies and gentlemen, I say we waste no time and get right into our UFC no chase predictions, because I know as a UFC fan, I am buzzing for this card. It is going to be electric. Let's dive right into our UFC no chase official preview and predictions. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I just witnessed some of the craziest stuff that I have ever seen in my life as I went to take a little break to go pet the dogs, get some water before dropping our UFC no chase picks. I watched one of my favorite commentators on the internet get assassinated in Charlie Kirk, and it is left me scarred. It is a bit of a mood changer, I'll say. And it was kind of hard to, I've been sitting here for like an hour now, like debating whether to continue or to, you know, just kind of do the episode how it is. But you know what? We're going to get through. Or you've seen no chase predictions. All I can do is pray and hope that he pulls through. But it was weird. It's just kind of, it's weird, guys. I was going to watch him in 2 Mondays in just over a week. He was coming to the U of M campus, and I think he's dead. I watched a video of him getting assassinated. It is as dark as deranged. Man, there's just so much evil in the world. And I don't know. I guess all you can be is elect, you know. I prayed about it for the last like hour or so, but man, it is dark. I don't even know. So we're gonna get through these UFC no chase predictions. You know, they have to get done, and you know, there's more important things than UFC in the world, ladies and gentlemen. So UFC Noche going down this upcoming Saturday. Should be fun. Guys, I kid you not. This is tough to get through, but we're gonna do it. UFC Noche going down San Antonio, Texas this upcoming Saturday. I think it's a midday card, middle of the day. It will be going down. Welterweight division is where we go up first, and it is the Ultimate Fighter finale. It was supposed to be on UFC 319 between Rodrigo Cenzionato and Daniil Danchenko. However, it was moved due to, I don't know if it was Rodrigo or Daniil unable to make weight, or if someone got injured. I think it was injury over both of them, but here we are going down, kicking off the card. The 9-1 Rodrigo Cenzionato, the underdog at +190, takes on the -250 favorite, the 12-2 Daniil Danchenko. Neither men have nicknames. I wish they did have some nicknames. Both don't have their height or reach listed, so clearly these guys are very relevant in the UFC's eyes. Rodrigo Cenzionato is 27 years old from Rio de Janeiro. He's on a 4-fight winning streak, and he trains at Nova União, same gym as Cal Fernandez, who won last weekend, and Jose Aldo, the great Jose Aldo, of his 9 wins. He has 4 KOs and 3 subs, so 7 of his 9 victories have came by finish, and 6 of those have been in round number 1. So Rodrigo is a finisher and appears to be a fun fighter. His opponent, Daniil Danchenko, is 24 years of age. He's also on a 4-fight win streak, and he hails from Ukraine. Of his 12 wins, he has 9 finishes, 7 KOs, and 2 subs, and he has gotten a round 1. He also has a round 1 KO in 1 championship. That's what you can know about him. I mean, I don't know much about either of these guys. It's pretty crazy. I'm sorry, I'm struggling with the fact that I just watched a man get assassinated. I've seen a lot of stuff on the internet, but this is just sticking with me, guys. My kid John is just sticking with me. But you know what? I'll leave that for maybe at the end. We're gonna get through this. As you can tell in the tone of my voice, it is dark. I wish I would have waited to check my phone so I was done recording this. But Rodrigo, Daniil, there's a little to be told between both of these guys. Historically, Brazilians have done well in the Ultimate Fighter finales. So Rodrigo, I mean, I don't know how he did on The Ultimate Fighter. I don't really watch Ultimate Fighter anymore, but I did catch Daniil Donchenko getting a finish, I believe. So I'm just going to go with the favorite here, Daniil Donchenko. I'm pretty sure the underdog won in the last fight as well, so it'd be pretty crazy if both underdogs won in the flyweight version of The Ultimate Fighter, which went down to UFC 319, which I couldn't even tell you who won. Was it Joseph? Something Joseph? I don't even know. But Daniil Donchenko over Rodrigo Nascimento. I really don't know anything about these guys. This is the rare case where it's like, I legit have no idea what's going to happen. Getting into our regular card, though, we are kicking it off with Montez Rendon taking on Alice Pereira. And no, she is in no relation to Poetan Pereira. Montez, Monster Rendon is 6-1. The Golden Girl, Alice Pereira? Golden Girl, 6-0. This will be the debut for Alice Pereira. She's coming in pretty similar size and weight to Montez Rendon. They both naturally stand in the orthodox fighting position. But Montez Rendon is notably 19, Alice Pereira is 19 years of age, which is utterly insane. Alice Pereira is from Brazil. Of her 6 wins, she has 4 finishes. That's right, she's only 6-0, and she is the favorite. Can you believe it? Her last win was in December of 2024, and this will make her the youngest female fighter to ever fight in the UFC. Her opponent is 36 years old from Mexico at plus 130, is Montez Rendon. I believe it used to be Montez Rendon, and she shortened it to Montez, so thank you. She was supposed to fight Melissa Mullins in November of 2024. Unfortunately, that never materialized, so her last fight was in March of 2024. She is 1-1 in grappling, but in MMA, since joining the UFC in September 2023, she's gone 1-1. She has left little to be desired, and I love when they bring in young prospects, so I gotta go with Alice Pereira. What if we had another Pereira? But in the form of a female, this Alice Pereira, just absolutely taking over the UFC. That would be pretty cool, pretty crazy. So we're going to go with Alice Perez to kick off the card, or I guess continue the card, as The Ultimate Fighter just feels like its own kind of thing, essentially. But keeping us moving, men's flyweight division, here we go. Here's some guys we're familiar with. Actually, we're not. We have another debuting fighter, Alessandro Costa, takes on Cobra Alden Correa. Alessandro is 14-4. Alden Correa is 10-3 with one no contest. Alessandro is 5'4". He's one of the shortest fighters in the flyweight division. This dude is tiny. This dude is 5'4". I mean, there's women taller than him. Literally, the two women we talked about, I'm pretty sure, are taller than him. But Alessandro Costa is the favorite at -475. Alden at +330 is the underdog. Costa is 29 years old from Brazil, but now fights out of Mexico. He trains at Legacy MMA /Brazilian Warriors, the same gym as the man in our main event, Diego Lopez. He has 5 KOs and 6 subs out of his 14 career victories, and he was originally supposed to fight Edgar Charez, one of the better flyweight prospects, but Edgar pulled out, so instead he will get the debuting Alden Correa. Alessandro came off of season 6 of Dana White's Contender Series, where he won a split decision. He has since gone 2-2 in the UFC, with losses to Amir Albazi and Steve Ersig, and round 2 TKOs of Jimmy Flick and Kevin Borjas, both earning him performance bonuses. His last fight was at UFC 301 in May of 2024, so it has been a long time coming to see Alessandro Costa in the UFC again. Excited to see him. He's usually an exciting prospect, but he's been win-loss since 2022, so we'll see if he can continue his ways when he takes on Alden Correa. Alden Correa, coming in, is 27 years old from Texas. The +330 underdog is on a 3-fight winning streak, and he trains out a 4-ounce fight club in Texas, the same gym as the number one ranked flyweight Joshua Van. He has 4 KOs and 4 subs of his 10 career victories, and he's only ever been submitted once of his 3D. Feats. He started in the LFA, where he began his career, which is events they have in Minnesota occasionally, and his last win did come in May. I'm torn on this one, because I don't know Alden's abilities, but I know Alessandro Costa's ceiling. And his ceiling is Amir Albazi and Steve Ersig. Now, Amir Albazi and Steve Ersig are currently the number 4 and number 11 flyweights. Kevin Borjas and Jimmy Flick are kind of irrelevant guys. So the safe bet here is going to be Alessandro Costa, but I'll have to see how Alden Correa does. Like, I just genuinely don't know enough about this guy, and I do know a decent amount about Alessandro Costa, that he is very good striking. So if Alden Correa wants to hang in there, might have to mix it up with some takedowns. Moving on to our next contest, and like I said, this is one of the weakest UFC no-shake cards we've ever had, and a lot of these fights are highly questionable, such as this middleweight bout between Zachary Savage Reese and Cedric the Reaper Dumas. I have no idea how he's in the UFC. I genuinely have no idea. Zach Reese, 9-2. Cedric, 10-3. 6'4 to 6'2. 2 inches in height for Zachary Reese. 2 inches in reach for Cedric Dumas. 79 to 77. Orthodox stance for Dumas. Switch stance for Zachary Reese. Yeah. Pretty evenly size wise. I mean, Zachary is 2 inches in height, 2 inches in reach for Dumas. But other than that, nothing too much. The odds makers have it minus 255 for Zach Reese, plus 205 for Cedric Dumas. Let's start with Reese. You know, big fan of Zachary Reese. We share the same first name. He spells it correctly, not with a K. And you know what? He's 31 years old, which is crazy because when he came into Damas Quintero series back in 2023, he didn't feel like he was only 29. He felt much younger than that. But he's had an action-packed start to his career. Of his 9 wins, 7 finishes. You know, 5 KOs, 2 subs. He has 7 round 1 finishes, which is all of his finishes. They've all came in round 1. Trains out of WAR Training Center, the War Training Center. Same as Rakeem Cleveland, who was recently knocked out by Jerzy Rozenstruik in I don't know if it was dirty boxing or something, but he just fought Jerzy Rozenstruik and Trevin Giles, another UFC veteran. Zachary Reese, I remember his Dana White's Contender Series fight on Season 7, where he got a round 1 armbar. He then debuted against Cody Brundage couple months later and got slam finished when he had him in an arm bar. After that, he would knock out Julian Marquez in 20 seconds. I remember being with my boy Jaden when I watched that. And then in August of 2024, he beat Jose Dang Medina by his first decision. In January this year, he took on Osmat Bekov and got absolutely ran through, but we didn't know how good Osmat was. And then he went to decision with Dusko Todorovic in May and picked up a victory. So good stuff there. He really rallied late in that contest. He struggled in round 1, but I'm picking this guy all days of the week because he's taken on a criminal, and I genuinely hate criminals, in Cedric Dumas. Cedric is 30 years old from Florida. He has 4 KOs and 2 subs out of his 10 victories, and he was supposed to fight UFC 317. Okay, he's actually had 5 canceled fights in his UFC career. This man has 13 professional fights. Okay, so 13 professional fights. He has been arrested 15 times. Okay, I legit have no idea how he's not A, in jail, and not B, like, still in the UFC. Like, it makes no sense how he's even fighting in the UFC. He must have some dirt. He has some dirt on Dana White, let me tell you that. He was actually recently posting on social media how he only has $23 to his name, so I don't even know how he's going to make it to this fight. Cedric came off of Season 6 of Damas Quintero series, having some face tats and getting a 47-cent guillotine choke. We'll do that to you. But he was then shockingly submitted a year later by Josh Frebb, which was hilarious. He would beat Cody Brundage and Abu Azzatir in boring decisions before getting knocked out in round 1 by Nursultan Rozenboyev, where he complained of being poked in the eye. He would then beat Dennis Tallulah in August 2024 by decision before getting knocked out in 2 minutes and 49 seconds in April of this year by Michael Okojasek. I do not care for Cedric Dumas. I really like Zachary Reese, so we're going to ride with Zachary Reese. But to be honest, these guys are low-key on the same level, so if Cedric pulls off the upset and somehow continues his UFC run, I would not necessarily be surprised at all. Dropping from middleweight to flyweight, we look at Jesus Aguilar and Luis Gurule. Jesus Aguilar, 11-3. Luis Grim Gurule is 10-1. 5'5 to 5'4. Two short boys in the flyweight division. 64-inch reach to 62-inch reach. Advantage for Luis Gurule. Orthodox stance for both of our gentlemen. Jesus at plus 180 is the underdog. Luis Gurule minus 220 is the favorite. Jesus Aguilar, I've seen much more of in the UFC than Luis Gurule. The 29-year-old is from Mexico, and he has 1 KO and 7 subs out of his 11 career victories. So, decent. 8 of 11 finishes. Of his 3 defeats, he's been submitted twice. He came off of Season 6 of Dana White's Contender Series, where he got a Round 3 guillotine choke. He debuted in February of 2024, getting submitted by Tetsuro Taira, which isn't bad at all, before he would get a 17-second knockout, split decision win, and a Round 1 guillotine choke over Stuart Nicole in August of 2024, which was his last victory. After going 3-0 between July of 2023 and August 2024, his lone fight this year would go to decision, where he would lose to Rafael Estevam. He would get taken down 11 of 19 times on his way to a decision loss. But he did win the final round, which does say a lot for me. Jesus Aguilar has had a very goofy UFC run. The losses of Tetsuro Taira and Rafael Estevam are not that bad, being that Rafael Estevam is 14-0 and Tetsuro Taira is literally the number 5 flyweight on the planet. His opponent, Luis Gurule, coming into this one, he's 31, 2 years older, from Colorado. 6 of his 10 wins, he's gotten finishes, 5 kills, and 1 sub, and he's gone 2-0 in LFA, outside of the UFC. I always love seeing LFA fighters. You've been seeing a lot more of them now. Them, Cage Warriors, Cage Fury, Fun fighters coming out of there. He fought on last season of Dana White's Contender Series, earning a contract after winning a split decision in week number 10. He would debut in April of this year, getting knocked out in round 2 by Oday Osborne. He would control him for 2 minutes in round 1 before, in the opening stages of round 2, just get caught, knocked out plainly as day. I think that Oday's reach really gave him a problem, and also the size of Oday Osborne, being that Oday was just that much bigger than him. I mean, more of a reach, more of a 9 inches in reach, 4 inches in height. It adds up, you know. Well, after watching last night's fight between Concrete and whoever he knocked out, the heavyweights, yeah, size matters at times. So for this one, I really like Jesus Aguilar as an underdog. Like, I'm telling you, I don't know if Luis Garrule is cut out for the UFC. I don't really know. You know, he's done decent outside of the UFC, but at plus 180, I haven't taken an underdog yet on the card. Give me Jesus Aguilar. You gotta make these underdog picks. You really do. And Luis Garrule was just knocked out by Oday Osborne, and I've seen Aguilar. I've seen he can hang. It even took down Esteban twice. So, gonna go with Jesus Aguilar. Plus, he's Mexican, and we gotta root for Mexican fighters if it's UFC Noche. Next up, have no idea why this is on the prelims. This, if anything, should be the co-main event as we head to the women's strawweight division. That is right. As the number 2 ranked Tatiana Suarez takes on the number 4 ranked Amanda Lemos. This is the top three fighters in the division, and they're somehow on here. Tatiana Suarez 11-1, Amanda Lemos 15-4-1, 5-5-5-4-1. Tonight for Tatiana, also has one reach, 1 inch reach, 66-65 southpaw stance. You rarely see two southpaw fighters fighting each other, so. Good stuff here. Tatiana Suarez minus 500. Oh my goodness. Amanda Lemos plus 350. This one is, they're leading Tatiana a lot here. The 34-year-old from California has 7 of her 11 wins by finish, 2 KOs and 5 subs. And of her, you know, UFC career, it's she's had 5 cancel bouts over her career, and so far had 2 in 2024 before leading to a title shot earlier this year against Zhang Weili, where she won round 1, then proceeded to get destroyed the other 4 rounds. Tatiana Suarez fought in the UFC from 2019 to 2016, going a very impressive 5-0 with 3 finishes. She would then have to take 4 years off for a battle with I don't even know what injury, sickness, before returning in 2023 to get back-to-back guillotine chokes in round number 2. After earning a performance bonus in both of those, she was scheduled for big fights in 2024. None of them materialized. None of them materialized. She ended up getting a title shot against Zhang Weili at UFC 312. She would get 3 minutes of control time in round 1. She would get 37 seconds in round 5, 44 seconds in round 3, and a minute 27 in round 2 on her way to just under 6 minutes of control time. Other than that, she lost every single round and even got 10-8'd at one point. Yeah. Tatiana Suarez looked a shell of herself against Zhang Weili. She just looked like she didn't even want to be there. So we'll see if she can bounce back when she takes on Amanda Lemos. Amanda Lemos is 38. Crazy. She's already 38 years old. There was at one point in 2017, she was just a young, hungry up-and-comer. But no, that was many, many moons ago, and the Brazilian has had 8 KOs and 3 subs over 15 wins. So 11 of 15 wins as a female, pretty impressive. I'd love to see that. Over 4 defeats, she's been finished 3 times, and she has a very stellar 9-4 record in the UFC. After debuting in 2017 and losing, she would go on a 5-fight winning streak, including 3 round 1 finishes. After winning a split decision against Angela Hill, she would get submitted in her first main event against Jessica Andrade. Following that up with 2 finishes, it would lead her to a title shot against Zhang Weili, where it was literally the most dominant championship performance I've ever seen in my life. Zhang Weili got performance bonus for just winning a 5-round fight. After that, she would beat Mackenzie Dern in one of the greatest women's fights I've ever seen at UFC 298. So entertaining. Before getting armbarred by Virna Jandidoba in a main event back in July of 2024. Earlier this year, she fought Yasmin Lucindo and grappled her to a victory. It was a very, very boring fight. I mean, that was just an awful fight. But, you know, she did lose round 3, which is kind of telling. I absolutely adore Amanda Lemos here at plus 350. I think it is a perfect bet. I think Tatiana did not look good at all in her fight against Zhang Weili, and I don't know if she's going to bounce back at all. I thought she was maybe even going to retire, but Amanda Lemos is out here whooping young girls' asses, so we're going to go with Amanda Lemos to get it done. Praise be. We'll just keep on a rolling. Next up, lightweight division in our second-to-last prelim as Claudio Prince of Peru Puelas is finally back as he takes on Neto BJJ Joaquim Silva. Claudio, 13-4. Hakeem, 13-6. 5'8 to 5'10, 2 inches in height for Claudio. And Claudio is 3 inches in reach, 72-69. Yet again, southpaw stance for both of these fighters. Really love our southpaws here. Minus 120 for both guys. This is a pick'em, even odds, and I could see this going either way for both of these guys. Claudio is 29 years young from Peru. He has 9 of his 13 wins by finish, 2 KOs and 7 subs. Of his 4 defeats, he's been TKO'd twice. He has gone 5-3 in the UFC and is unfortunately on a 2-fight losing streak. After losing the Ultimate Fighter Championship in 2016, he would go on a 5-fight run, which actually saw back-to-back knee bars, including one over Clay Guida. That was back in April of 2022. He hasn't won since. November 2022 puts on an abysmal performance against Dan Hooker, who desperately needed the win. He would take almost a year and a half off before coming back against Fares Zayam in February of 2024, losing a split decision, as he should have. All he did was shoot takedowns for 7.5 minutes of control time. So, Claudio, this is going to be a guy. All right, I just want to prepare you. That is going to be like Paul Craig, going to be like Cron Gracie. He only goes for guard. He only goes for your knee. He only goes for takedowns. That is what you can expect from Claudio Puelles. Now, as for his opponent, Hakeem Silva, he spices it up. You know, Hakeem always brings something different to the table. 36 years old means he's 7 years older than Claudio, and this man is from Brazil. 10 of his 13 wins are by finish, 7 KOs and 3 subs, and of his 5 defeats, he's been TKO'd 3 times. He has gone 6-5 in the UFC and was originally supposed to fight earlier this year in Mexico City against Rafa Garcia. Unfortunately, he had to pull out of that, meaning he hasn't fought since May of 2024. That was a loss to Jakar Close, where he did land a knockdown, but lost the 2 final rounds. His last win was in December of 2023, when he beat Clay Guida by unanimous decision. This man has fought some tough people in the UFC, Vink Pichel, Nasrat Akpasaran, even Armin Sarukian. Hold some fun finishes over Jared Gordon, Jesse Ronson, Andrew Holbrook. But other than that, hasn't done much in his run. I really like Claudio Puelles here. I think he can really put it on with the submissions and get Hakeem Silva out of there. But I think it's either going to be Claudio on the ground or Silva on the feet. That is my official prediction. Moving on to our final prelim. I have no idea how the matchmakers, or even the, not even the matchmakers, the card bookers decided that this should be the highlight prelim. But here we are. I still don't know how these two guys are in the UFC, but the winner of this will stay. Loser will most definitely go as Chicho Jose Daniel Medina takes on Thunder Dusko Todorovic. Jose, 11-5. Dusko, 12-6. 6'1 to 6 foot 1 inch in height for Dusko. 74 inch reach for both gentlemen. Orthodox stance for both gentlemen. They are very, very similar. Medina at plus 250 is a nice little underdog. Dusko at minus 320 is the favorite. JDM, but not your Jack Della Maddalena, your Jose Daniel Medina coming into this contest. 34 years old from Bolivia. Don't really see many Bolivian fighters. Of his 11 wins, 10 finishes, 8 KOs, and 2 subs. Of his 5 defeats, he's been finished twice. This man lost on season 7 of Dana White's Contender Series, getting grappled to death by Magomed Gadzialuzev, before coming back in August of 2024 on short notice to fight Zachary Reese. Zach would grapple him to a decision before coming back in March of this year when he took on Ateba Gaudier, who made him look silly. I mean, Jose decided it was smart to egg on Ateba after getting knocked out. He would get knocked out shortly right after that. So Jose, 0-3 in the UFC. His career has quickly gone from an 11-2 record to an 11-5 record. And I will say this is his most winnable fight. Of his Dana White's Contender Series fight, of his 2 UFC fights, this is the most winnable fight for him. But I will say he's averaging 1 fight a year, so him staying active from March to September is good to see. But I don't know how he's going to do against Dusko Todorovic. Dusko, man, talk about one of the most wasted potentials I've ever seen. 31 years old, born in Montenegro, has been fighting out Serbia since I can remember. 11 of his 12 wins are by finish, 8 KOs and 3 subs. Of his 6 defeats, he has been finished 4 times. And I remember Dusko since his debut. Dusko came in August of 2019 when he fought Teddy Ash on Dana White's Contender Series. I didn't watch that fight, but I did watch his debut when he knocked out Jaquan Townsend on October of 2020. After that, I thought he had potential, but he took on Punahele Soriano, and we realized his ceiling was much lower than we thought. After that, he would drop a decision to Gregory Rodriguez before bouncing back with a round one finish of McKee Patolo. With a 2-2 record in the UFC, he was looking good before he ran into prime Chidi Inchukani, who elbowed him to death in round number one. After that, he would bounce back with a fight of the night TKO of Jordan Wright, putting him at a decent 3-3 record in the UFC. That win was in 2022, and like many fighters we've said, that was his last win. In March of 2023, he would get injured in round one against Christian Leroy Duncan. In November of 2024, he would get fed to Mansour Abdul Malik, and the last time he fought in May of 2025, he put on a decent performance, but it was against the man we talked about, Zachary Reese. So, Dusko is on a 3-fight losing streak. You can even say that he has gone a very awful 3-6 in the UFC, and this is make or break for him. All signs point towards a win by Dusko Todorovic, which usually means that Jose Medina will win. But I'm going to go with Dusko Todorovic in this one. I have no idea what's going to happen, but hey, you know what? I think he can get a knockout if he really puts it together. He's my pick. Now let's get into this main card. Man, guys, all right, we took another break and we're back, and Charlie Kirk may be stable, which would be very good here. I'm very hopeful that he would be stable, but man, this is still shattering. This is very real. This puts life into perspective that, you can't really, if you have a certain political view, you can just be killed, just be assassinated in broad daylight in front of a massive crowd, which is just insane to think about. But you know what? I'm pushing through. We're still going through. You know, I'm letting all my thoughts out here. I don't care what political side of the aisle you're on. Watching someone die is very, very disturbing. So keeping us moving, you know, we're trying to find some joy. You know what? There'll be some joy this weekend. You know, you got to find the joys in life. And hopefully some dreams come true for some of these fighters. Starting off the main card, we got Santiago Border Boy Luna and Quang Bang Lee. Luna, the debutee, minus 125 is the favorite. At plus 105, Quang Lee's the underdog. Santiago Luna is 6-0. Quang Lee is 9-2. And we have seen him before in the UFC. Orthodox stands for both of these fighters. Santiago Luna, 21 years old, born in California, now fights out of Mexico. Fights out of the On-Tram gym, same gym as Michael Morales, the top 10 welterweight in the UFC. Of his 6 wins, 2 KOs and 4 subs, 3 of which have taken place in round number 1. Crazy to think that this kid's younger than me, you know? Born in August of 2004, I was born in October of 2002. Very, very cool. Now, as for Santiago, he's got everything going for him. Young upshot debuting in UFC Noche in San Antonio. But he's taking on a guy in Quang Lee, who certainly knows how to bang. 33 years old from Vietnam and out, fights out of Brooklyn Center, Minnesota. He trades out of the academy, same place as John Castaneda, other UFC fighters. I have literally watched fighters from this gym compete when I was in person watching the Ignite fights where my buddy Jimmy fights. So pretty cool. Of his 9 wins, 6 finishes, 2 KOs, and 4 subs. He's gone 7-0 in LFA, and he was originally supposed to fight David Martinez before David Martinez was called up. And this fight has dealt with so many cancellations, so many bookings. I think that's one of the main things that has affected this card. He debuted in short notice in October of 2024, fighting Chris Gutierrez, who he would unfortunately lose to. He would come back in China, getting knocked out in round 3 by Zhao Long. But then, earlier this year in May, bounced back, submitting Gaston Bolanos in round number 2, earning himself a performance bonus. That was actually in Des Moines, Iowa. So he's back, he's ready, and, you know, two things are going to happen here. Luna's either going to go over and knock him out, beat him up on the feet, or Lee's going to get the takedown, survive some damage, and get the submission. And I don't know if they're setting up Quang Lee to get finished here, but I really like him as an underdog. Debuting fighters have really struggled this year, especially when they're undefeated. He's also 21. Lee is 33. He has fought much more experienced fighters. This will be his 4th UFC fight. And if you can go the distance with Chris Gutierrez, I think you can beat the young up-and-comers. We're going to go with Quang Lee here. Another underdog pick. Another risky pick. That is what we do on the pod. Moving on to the men's lightweight division. Alexander El Gran Chango. You gotta be kidding me. Alexander Hernandez keeps changing his nickname. I cannot with this man. I think that's the great ape in Mexican, but this man has changed his nickname so many times. He takes on Diego Ferreira. Alexander is 17-8. Diego, 19-6. Both men are 5'9". 2-inch reach advantage, 74-72 for Diego. Orthodox stands for both these guys. I have covered their fights for 5 years now. I am very familiar with both of these men. Coming into this contest, Hernandez is the favorite at minus 145, and Diego is the underdog at plus 115. Let's start off with Alexander Hernandez, 32 years old. He is the only fighter directly from San Antonio, Texas. Trains out of Factory X Muay Thai, same gym as Dustin Jacoby, Yusuf Zalal, top 10 featherweight, and Brandon Rivell, top 3 UFC flyweight. Of his 17 wins, he has had 9 finishes, 7 KOs and 2 subs. Of his 8 defeats, he's been finished 4 times. And Hernandez is in kind of a career revitalization. At the moment, he is 2-0 in 2025, is coming off one of the biggest wins of his career, you could say, over Chase Hooper. Hernandez debuted in 2018, and he was one of the original fighters to be put on those humbled lists. Cocky Fire gets humbled when Don Cerrone knocked him out. After starting 3-1, he would run to a prime Drew Dober, who knocked him out. After bouncing back from that, he would lose to Thiago Moises, where he would then bounce back with a minute and 20-second knockout of some nobody. He would then run into Renato Moicano and Billy Quarantillo, who would both finish him in separate fights in round number 2. In February of 2023, he would defeat Jim Miller in dominant fashion before going 0-2 to start off 2024, losing to Bill Algeo and Damon Jackson. He would end 2024 with a split decision win over Austin Hubbard. He would start off the year in March defeating Kurt Holbo before, of course, knocking out Chase Hooper with 2 seconds left in round one at UFC 319. That's right, this man fought August 16th and is already fighting again. Not even a month turnaround. You gotta give it to him for Alexander Hernandez. Absolutely love the effort from him. Absolutely love that he's staying active. And if he can win this, he'll be 3-0 in 2025 and on a 4-fight win streak. That's how you turn around your career. But it won't be easy, as the toughest opponent in the last while will be Diego Ferreira. Diego is 40 years old, born in Brazil, but now lives out of Texas. Trains at Fortis MMA, same gym as Muhammad Usman, Jeff Neal, Ryan Spann, a lot of good UFC fighters. 12 of his 19 wins are by finish, 5 KOs and 7 subs, and of his 6 defeats, he's only ever been finished by knockout 3 times. He's gone 10-6 in the UFC and was originally supposed to fight King Green, formerly known as Bobby Green, at UFC 319. Diego, you know what, last time he fought in January of this year, took on Grant Dawson and was just grappled to death. But before that, he had beaten Matheus Rebeque, had put on a highlight reel against Michael Johnson. He was doing pretty good, 2-1 since his return in 2023. Now, this man's been with the UFC since 2014, and from 2014 to 2021, he was actually very freaking good, if you ask me. He had gone 8-5, actually. His only losses are to Benil Dariush, Dustin Poirier, Gregory Luceppe, and Matheus Gamrot. Like, this guy's really freaking good. At one point, he was on a 6-fight winning streak, including a win over Anthony Pettis, and then he lost a split decision fight of the night to Benil Dariush. Then he had a comeback on him by Gregory Giuseppe in 2021, and for 2 years, he was out of action. But when he came back against Michael Johnson, he looked good. When he fought Matheus Rebeque, he had a comeback with 9 seconds left in the fight. So we know that Diego Ferreira is good, but I am going to give the nod to Hernandez here. He is coming in more crisp, he's coming in more hungry, and I think he is looking to extend his knockout streak to 2 and his win streak to 4. So we're going to go with Alexander Hernandez to get himself a win, get himself a finish. That's what we are going to ride with. Next up, we get a fan favorite here. You know, some people have him as a fan favorite. I would say, you know, I put him in my fan favorite category as Calvin Gastelum takes on Dustin Stolfus. Calvin Gastelum, 20-10 with one no contest, takes on the 16-7 Dustin Stolfus. 6'5", 3 inches in height for Dustin, but that's always been the case for Calvin. 4 inches in reach for Dustin, 75-71 southpaw for Gastelum, orthodox for Dustin Stolfus. And both of these gentlemen come in at 33 years of age. Calvin Gastelum coming in, 33 years old, from Arizona, is the minus 265 favorite. Dustin is at plus 215 and underdog. 5 KOs and 5 subs give him a 50% finish rate, and of his 10 defeats, he's only ever been submitted 3 times, so this man is a decision merchant. He's 13-10 in the UFC and has had an outstanding number of 12 canceled bouts. That's right, Calvin loves to have canceled bouts. Been with the UFC since 2013 when he won The Ultimate Fighter. He'd start off his run 5-0 before running into a prime Tyron Woodley, who he did take to a split decision. He would bounce back with a TKO win before losing another split decision fight of the night to Neil Magny. He would then beat Johnny Hendricks and Tim Kennedy in back-to-back fights before having an overturned win over Vitor Belfort. He would run to prime Chris Weidman, who would submit him, before he would then retire Michael Bisping in one of the nastiest knockouts you will ever see. He would then finally win a split decision and finally fight for a middleweight interim belt against Israel Adesanya. That would be one of the greatest fights of 2019. It would go to a fight of the night. Since that fight, he's just never been the same. Split decision loss to Darren Till, heel hooked by Jack Hermanson, beaten unranked Ian Heinisch, who would get cut shortly after, would then take back-to-back short-notice main events in a, like, 4-month span against Robert Whittaker, Jared Cannonier, obviously losing both of them before finally dropping down to welterweight in 2023 and defeating Chris Curtis. He would then take on Sean Brady, who would submit him. He would then take on Daniel Rodriguez in June of last year, who he would beat. And last time he fought in June, Joe Pyfer made him look silly. But I will say he's durable. He's really looking, you know, not too bad as of late. And Calvin Gastelum going the distance with Joe Piver is a win unto himself. But it won't be easy as he takes on Dustin Stolfus. Also 33, as we mentioned, from Pennsylvania. 9 of his 16 wins are by finish, 3 KOs and 6 subs. Of his 7 defeats, he's been finished 4 times. He's 3-6 in the UFC and was originally, this is a fun fact, back in 2021. You know, back when he officially debuted, because he fought on Day One's Contender Series, won against Joe Piper, who just injured his arm. I have no idea how he even got a contract. When he started off his UFC career, he fought Kyle Daukaus and lost. After that, he was scheduled, and I kid you not, to fight Fluffy Hernandez, Anthony Hernandez, and Kyle Barallo, both in December of that year. He ended up getting Gerald Meerschaert, who submitted him. I just found it crazy that he could have fought two of the top 10 fighters we have on this planet, but for the middleweight division, that is, not on the whole planet. But since that, you know, he would go win, loss, win, loss, win, and most recently lost to Arnold Schwarzenegger in May. Dustin, I don't really know how he's still in the UFC. He does have a fun finish of Marc-Andre Barriot, but overall, Calvin Gastelum should be able to neutralize anything Dustin throws at him and get a decision victory. So we are going to ride with Calvin here. If Calvin does lose, I think it may be time to retire, my sweet Calvin Gastelum. After that, we get into our final three fights, and it really isn't a big three. The main event's really the biggest fight on this whole card. Lightweight division for the final time of the night as gifted Rafa Garcia takes on Jared Flash Gordon. 17-4 for Rafa Garcia, very sturdy record for him, and Jared Gordon, 21-7 in no contest, not too bad himself. 2 inches in height for Flash, 5'9 to 5'7, but 2 inches in reach for gifted, 70 to 68. Orthodox stance for both of these lightweight fighters. Veterans of the division, Rafa Garcia is the underdog, plus 190. Jared Gordon, minus 235, is the favorite. Rafa, 31 years old from Mexico, trains out of Elevation and out of Bloodline MMA. Elevation, Corey Sandhagen, Curtis Blaydes. From Bloodline, you get actually the man who won this past weekend, Larian. Oh my gosh, what was his name? Larian Douglas. Larian Douglas, who got the nasty knockout over Cam Teague we mentioned earlier on Dana White's Contender Series. Rafa Garcia has 9 of his 17 wins by finish, 1 KO, and somehow 8 subs. I didn't even know he was known for takedowns. He's 5-4 in the UFC. He's never really done much. I hate to say it. Rafa Garcia has never really done much. Came in 2021, started off 0-2, then won 2 fights, then lost, then won 2 fights, then lost, and most recently beat Vink Pichel in Mexico in March 2025. Didn't really do much in that fight. Biggest career win is probably Clay Guida. And yeah, I don't know. Rafa Garcia just hasn't really given me anything to make me think, yeah, I really got to watch this guy. All 4 of his losses have came in the UFC. We'll see how he does against a man who's kind of been on killer's row, Jared Gordon. Jared Gordon is 37 from New York City. Trains out of Henzo Gracie and Killcliffe FC. 2 massive gyms. The Gracie family, of course, Killcliffe FC. A lot of UFC fighters come out of there. 10 of his 21 wins are by finish, 8 KOs and 2 subs. Of his 7 defeats, he's been finished 5 times, 4 by KO, 1 by sub. He is 9-6 in the UFC. Gordon debuted in 2017, starting off 2-0 before dropping 2 fights, including a loss to none other than Diego Ferreira. He would then win a fight before running into Prime Charles Oliveira, who knocked him out in 84 seconds. I want to say it might have been 86. It was rough. He followed that up with 3 straight decision wins before running into Grant Dawson, who would submit him in round number 3. He would beat Leonardo Santos in 2022 before dropping 2 fights, 1 to Paddy Pimblett, an awful decision, and a no contest against King Green when they clashed heads. He would then follow it up with a knockout win over Mark Madsen in November of 2023 before losing a very controversial split decision to Nazrek Haqparastan. Earlier this year, he fought in May and knocked out Thiago Moises in 3.5 minutes. Jared Gordon, I think he's got it in the hands. I think he's going to carry some momentum in here, and I think he's going to stop Mexico's fighter here in Rafa Garcia. Give me Jared Gordon, round 1 knockout. I could even see round 2. Rafa Garcia landing some takedowns, and Jared comes out on the feet, gets him out of there. I'm going to ride with Gordon here, but this is yet again another 50-50 matchup, and plus, Rafa Garcia at plus 190, a good underdog if you're looking for some underdogs in this fight. Co-main event brings us to another ranked fighter as the men's bantamweight divisions, the men's bantamweight division, number 9 ranked Rob Font takes on the unranked David Martinez. David Black Spartan Martinez, awesome nickname. Rob Font never chose to get a nickname. 22-8 for Rob Font is his professional record, 12-1 for David Martinez. 5'8 to 5'5, 3 inches in height for Rob, and a notable 4 inches in reach as well. 71-67, orthodox stance for both of these gentlemen. Rob Font, minus 140, is of course the favorite. as he should be at plus 120. I don't know who to think David Martinez is, but he is not as big of an underdog as he should be. Rob Font, 38 years old, is a 11-year age. He's 11 years older. I'm speaking in some foreign tongues here. So he is 11 years older than David Martinez. Rob Font is from Boston, fights out of the New England cartel. Obviously, same gym as Calvin Kattar, some fighters on Damon's Contender Series. We have known about Rob Font for a while. 9 KOs and 4 subs give him 13 of his 22 wins by finish, and he's only ever been submitted once in his entire career. Other than that, never even knocked out Nate Dury. He is a very solid chimp. He's gone 12-7 in the UFC, so this will be UFC fight number 20 for the kid. He was originally supposed to fight Raul Rosas Jr., but Raul got injured, and this came after he was originally supposed to fight Dominic Cruz in February of this year, and Dominic Cruz got injured and pulled out. He did fight earlier this year in Seattle, where he beat Gene Matsumoto by split decision in a very, very, very close matchup. Since that, though, I mean, Rob Font, you know, he has had his time. Rob Font has had his time, but I think after he wins this, because I do think he'll win, he'll be on a 3-fight win streak, which is pretty crazy. Debuted over a decade ago in 2014, starting out his UFC run with a very stellar 5-2 record. He would then run into Rafael Asensio, suffering a decision defeat before going on a 4-fight win streak, including wins over Sergio Pettis, Ricky Simone, Marlon Moraes, and Cody Garbrandt. He would then lose back-to-back main events to Jose Aldo and Marlon Font, dropped a total of, Marlon Vera, I should say, 5 times across both those fights, but never knocked out. He would then humble Adrian Yanez at UFC 287 before running into Corey Sandhagen and Devin Figueiredo in boom, back-to-back decision losses. He would beat Kyler Phillips in October of last year, and like I said, beat Gene Matsumoto. So he's back, he's ready, and he's looking to defend himself against just yet another prospect in David Martinez. 27 years old from Mexico, he's on an 8-fight winning streak. What else about the kid? He has 10 KOs out of his 12 wins. He was originally supposed to fight Carlos Vera, then he was originally supposed to fight Quang Lee, and now he's fighting the guy at the co-main event. That's right, number 9 in the world. So David Martinez has had a pretty crazy run here. Carlos Ferreira got injured. Quang Lee steps in. You then see Raul go down. So they're like, David, you're the only other man to wait on the card. Quang Lee gets a short-nosed opponent, and now David Martinez is fighting Rob Font. Pretty crazy week for him. 6 of his wins have came in round 1. He's actually had 2 round 4 KOs, so this dude does have experience when it goes to the later rounds. Won a contract after a decision win on season 8. And then in March of this year in Mexico City, got a 4-minute knockout over Salmon Oliveira. But I do want to say Salmon Oliveira was used to get Diego Marcos and Tony Gravely both in the UFC. He is not good at all. So we'll see how this one goes. But Dave Martinez, I would love to see an upset. I think he'll have a lot of success in round 1. But I think Rob Font edges this out. And if he's ever going to get another knockout, now's the time for Rob Font. I'm easily picking Rob. But it would be really cool to see David pull this one out. Now let's get into the main event. Now let's get into the main event, because the main event is going to be amazing. Main event's going to be amazing because I have no idea what's going to happen. Literally anything could happen here. We head to the men's featherweight division. The number 2 ranked, Diego Lopez. The number 10 ranked, Gene Silva. This is the matchups we want. This is the matchups we wait for in the UFC. This screams UFC Noche to me. 26-7 for Lopez, 16-2 for Lord Gene Silva. 5'11-5'7, 4 inches in height for Diego Lopez, and 3 inches in reach, 72-69 orthodox stance for both of these fighters. We'll start with Diego. Ranked at number 2, he is somehow the plus 225 underdog. I have no idea how. Maybe Gene will go out there and knock him out right away, and I'll be like, oh, that makes sense. But still, Diego Lopez, 30 years old, from Brazil, now fights out of Mexico, trains out of Lobo Gym, plus the legacy Brazilian gym we've talked about. He trains with a lot of high-level fighters. 22 of his 26 wins are by finish, 10 KOs and 12 subs. Of his 7 defeats, he's only ever been knocked out twice, and one of those, last time it happened was in 2018. He debuted on Day West Contender Series in Season 5, dropping a decision to Joanderson Brito. 2 years would go by, and many moons later, he would fight Muzafer Evlov on short notice, giving him one of the toughest fights of his UFC career. After that, he would steal all of our hearts. Not one 90-second finish. Not 2 90-second finishes, but 3 90-second finishes, including a 1 minute 29-second knockout of Sadiq Youssef at UFC 300. He would then fight Dan Ige, who took him on 4 hours notice, up like 25, 35 pounds in weight. Crazy. He last fought and won against Brian Ortega at the Sphere at UFC Noche last year, almost knocked out. Probably the closest I've seen Brouwer take it to be knocked out in a long time. Ultimately fought Volk to a fight of the night decision, one of my favorite tail fights of the year, and almost knocked him out in round number two. Diego Lopez, love him, hate him. I don't understand how you could ever hate this man. He is amazing, and he's coming in here as the favorite somehow, despite still feeling like a young up-and-comer against Gene Silva, the last fighting nerd to be in a position to get a title shot. Carlos Prates lost to Ian Garry. Now, did bounce back against Jeff Neal, but still, lots of work to be done. Has a fight with Leon Edwards. Can end the year as the best fighting nerd, but Gene Silva could speedrun him here. We just watched Ruffy and Kyle lose last weekend, both kind of which didn't really leave us much to be desired. And Gene Silva is here to show us that the fighting nerds are still dominant. 28 years old from Brazil, he is on a 13-fight winning streak. Of course, 12 KOs and 3 subs give him 15 out of 16 wins by finish. We've been covering his career since January of 2024. He, of course, beat Kevin Vallejos on Dana White's Contender Series in 2023 before knocking out Weston Wilson in round 1, before knocking out Charles Jourdain in round 2, before finishing Drew Dober in round 3. That was a 3-0 in 2024. Getting into 2025, knocks out Melksick by Kadisarian in Seattle, knocks out Bryce Mitchell at UFC 314, and that has earned him this shot against Diego Lopez. Both these guys last fought at UFC 314, and now their paths cross again. And this is the biggest good versus evil. This is a guy in Diego Lopez who everyone loves, and this is a guy in Gene Silva who everyone is growing to hate just because he plays a villain so well. Now, ability-wise, it's tough to say. I think Diego Lopez hits really hard. You know, I think that people are underestimating how hard he hits, how hard it is to submit this guy. And as for Gene Silva, I mean, I just like to look at the competition level of who these guys have been fighting. And Gene Silva, his last 3 wins are Drew Dober, Melsik Bagdasarian, and Bryce Mitchell. Bryce Mitchell is the biggest win of his career. For Diego Lopez, he's fought in Dan Ige, Brian Ortega, and Alexander Volkanovski, 3 guys who are notoriously hard to put away. This is a big opportunity for Gene Silva. Carlos Prates failed to make the leap. Mauricio Ruffy really failed to make the leap. And Kyle Barallo is still a top 10 guy. But I'm going to go with Diego Lopez. He's plus 225. I mean, this is one of the best underdog predictions you can get all year. All right, Nazanin Imavov is an underdog. This is even better. Plus 225. I really don't know if Gene Silva's that guy. But if Gene Silva goes out and knocks him out, I'll be like, okay, I'll put some respect on his name. But as of right now, Diego, I got to ride with him. That's who I think is going to pull this one out. And I don't know if he gets it done by finish. I really think it does. I don't really see us going the distance. But I think if anything, maybe Gene Silva gasses out at the end of round 3. He doesn't have round 4 experience. And we could even see Silva get the submission here. Or Diego Lopez, I mean. But yeah, Diego Lopez over Gene Silva. This is going to be fantastic. So with that, ladies and gentlemen, that's all I have for UFC Noche. But man, I don't know the current state of Charlie Kirk. He might have already passed by now. He, you know, may still be in the hospital. But man, I just pray that, you know, the Lord looks over him, looks over his family. And yeah, it's pretty crazy that happened live while I'm recording a podcast. So with that, ladies and gentlemen, I got stuff to do today. You know, I got lots to do. It's 4 o'clock in the afternoon. I don't know if we're going to make it to the library in time. I may have to go after dinner. So, we'll have to see. But yeah, that's all I got for this episode. Week 2 NFL, UFC Noche, a lot of fun stuff. But just remember, outside of the world of sports and professional fighting, is that there's a real world out there, and there's a lot of evil in it. And the only way to overcome evil is through our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. You may laugh, you may be like, oh, it's not for me. Let me just tell you, he's for everyone, whether you want him or not. Ladies and gentlemen, go have an amazing weekend. Choose good over evil, and I'll see you next time on the Surprise Jab Podcast.